that isn't fulfilling the inner needs of the spirit, then I become interested. And so that's the first criteria. The second, to be able to make a little bit of space, a little bit of time. But this happens for everything that is essential and important. If I consider something to be important, I'll cut out other things and I'll make time for that. And there was a time when people used to feel that meditation was a luxury, either for those who had so much leisure that they needed to occupy their leisure time, or for people who were old and retired and had nothing else to do. And yet today I see meditation very differently. I see meditation as the mechanism for survival. At this point in the 90s, leading up to the end of the millennium, where we face a very uncertain future, meditation is very definitely the method to be able to survive in today's world. And so let me recognize its importance and thereby give it time. So the first, the inclination, the interest. The second, creating, making time for it. Even little children nowadays tell me how busy they are. So there's nobody who's not busy in something or another. And so it's very easy to shrug my shoulders and say, but I'm busy, what can I do? But as I said, if I recognize it's essential, I make space for it. The third step, a little bit of study, a certain amount of information is required. And then the fourth step, to be able to practice this, and the next, to make sure that I keep myself in the right atmosphere with the right type of friends, the right type of influence, so that there aren't other influences that are pulling my mind in a contrary direction to the direction that I want to take it in. So these are some of the steps required for meditation. And so I've chosen that I want to meditate. I sit comfortably and I've acquired a little bit of instruction in which I've understood that I'm a soul and not this body. And so I begin to focus here in the center of my forehead. I see myself as a soul, but not only that. Meditation means silence, solitude, not necessarily isolation, but inner solitude. But yet, meditation is very much a training to be able to be out there in the world and live life in a way that it should be lived. And so this step of meditation of the inner awareness of my own spiritual identity isn't something that I practice just in the morning and at night for a few minutes each day. But having done that, having created that pattern of consciousness and awareness in which I've stopped identifying with the things of the physical body and I'm now beginning to understand my true identity of that inner being. As I walk and talk and move, I make sure that my vision of others is also spiritual. It means I'm now seeing you, not as man or woman, or in terms of your age or nationality or physical background or social status or education or possessions. I'm now seeing you, the soul, as my eternal brother. Even though the soul may be in a male or female body, depending on how we want to express the attributes of the soul, we describe the soul as brother. We describe the world as being a brotherhood. And then I see you as the spiritual being, my attitude to you changes very greatly. I find that there aren't those divisions and blocks that divide us and obstruct anymore. But the vision of the soul, seeing others as the soul, and the interaction on the level of soul to soul, means that there's a very natural sweetness and respect that comes within my behavior. And it carries us forward to the state where every exchange of human beings is one that's able to give happiness and joy and bring each other closer to God. If I practice this awareness of being a soul, seeing souls, then I have the opportunity for a few minutes to sit quietly again. I do that, and within one moment, just one thought, then I'm able to experience a very natural and easy detachment of consciousness from the body. And so there aren't things that are holding me down in bondage to the world of matter. I am in a world of matter, but yet I'm not in bondage to matter. In this awareness of I, the soul, then I want to go a little bit further. I want to be able to experience a connection, a relationship with God. Just as there's the awareness of the soul as a being of light, very simple information about the concept of God is this awareness of God as a being of light. No other physical image, just this, a being of light, the one who is absolute, absolute in truth, absolute in beauty, absolute in purity, love, peace, and bliss. And this is why I want to be able to connect with the Supreme. On a human level, the closer the relationship with someone, the greater their influence on us. Past this film of your childhood and adolescence and maturity through the screen of your mind, and you'll see that this is absolutely true. The deeper the connection with somebody, the greater the impact they've had on you, on the way in which you think, on the way in which you behave, sometimes even in your manner of speech. We pick up words from each other, we pick up accents from each other, we pick up concepts from each other. We begin to talk the same. Certainly, we begin to think the same. And that might be good, or it might not. It depends. And we don't consciously very often make a choice. Is this good? Is this bad? We just get carried by circumstances. And perhaps it's only much, much later that we're detached enough to be able to look at it and say, now, that period of my life was good because I had very good friends. And they were able to help me move in a positive direction, or perhaps the other way. But that period of my life was not as I would have wanted it to be. And this is because the company I had, the friends I had, weren't as positive as they could have been. But now I'm talking about the relationship with God and God's influence on the soul itself. Naturally, if humans influence each other, God is able to influence us if we allow this to happen, if we choose this to happen. And the path of meditation is a conscious choice to allow this, so that I turn my attention to the eternal soul, I consciously detach my awareness from its physical body, and I focus my mind in the awareness of God. I focus my mind on that being who is the Supreme. And as I come into the experience of the presence of God, the first step is that it's a very beautiful discovery. Because this is the relationship that I've either ignored or I've forgotten or I've been searching for a very, very long time. But certainly I haven't actually enjoyed the experience of that connection. Someone once described how before finding an accurate method of being able to actually connect with God, there had been a lot of love for God in her life. And she now described it as having a pen friend. Some of you may have had pen friends and you've been writing letters to them for years and years. I know that I did this for a very long time. I think it was during my early days of my teens. And the pen friend I had, we'd corresponded for many, many years, but we'd never actually had an opportunity to meet. And I built up an image in my mind about what she must be like, not just in terms of appearance, because she'd sent me some photographs, so no problem, but in terms of how she was as a person. And then there came an opportunity to actually meet her. And it was fascinating, because there were certain aspects of her which I could identify with in terms of what I had thought about, and yet there were obviously other facets of her personality that had never been expressed through letters, and so I'd never actually got to know those. And so it was a whole new discovery, even though it was supposed to be in the relationship that we'd had for a long time. And in this case, in terms of the relationship with God, maybe I've been searching for God for a very, very long time. Maybe I've had certain experiences of God already, or maybe I've ignored Him. Whichever state it is, but yet, when I consciously choose to meditate, knowing that there isn't a physical image, knowing that there isn't even an angelic image, knowing that I even have to go beyond all deity, divine images, and just simply come to that awareness of God as a being of light. Now, I'm actually meeting the Supreme. I focus my thoughts on this being, and I make contact. And in this connection, now I begin to discover the infinity of the ocean, the vastness of the attributes of God, the Supreme. And as I discover and experience those attributes, I begin to fill myself with that unlimited peace, a love that's completely non-judgmental, unconditional, a love that's undemanding, a love that's not expecting or demanding a return. The soul actually begins to feel those waves of peace and love come from God, reach the soul, and of course it's a very beautiful discovery. So from that first state in which one could describe it as initiation, I'm trying to think of God, but my mind's energy is scattering in many, many different directions. With information and with practice, I focus my mind and I come to the state of meditation, where my thoughts are now focused around God, thinking of that form of light, thinking of the qualities of God, and even perhaps going on to yet another aspect, and that is the discovery of our relationships with God. To describe those relationships in human terms is always dangerous, because when I say God the Father, now depending on what your experience of your physical father has been, maybe it's been a very pleasant one, maybe it's been a very harsh experience. But the very word will conjure up those feelings and images within you again. there is a little bit of danger, but if you think about those relationships in their absolute definition, what is the ideal father like? Well, the Supreme Father is the ideal. What is the Supreme Mother like? Think about it, and that is who God is. Well, in fact, I should rather say God the Mother and then the Father. There's a very simple analogy that explains this to me, why it should be so that whenever we sing praise of God, we tend to say Mother and then Father, rather than the other way around. Well, on a biological level, the first connection and relationship the child has, in particular whilst in the womb, is only with the mother. There is no other connection at that point. Then, after birth, the relationship is then with the father. And so first always it's the mother, the one who actually generates and creates and sustains. And then the connection with the father. And so when I, the soul, turn to the path of spirituality, the very first experience is the experience of God's love coming back to the soul to revive it, to give it new life, to give it a new birth, and then to nurture it and sustain it and give it that strength. There's another analogy in this mother-father situation. You know how when a child goes out to play, then it's very natural that it should get a little bit dirty, a little bit dusty. And when the dusty child comes home, then what does the father very often do? I don't know whether it applies in your household, but certainly it applies in the majority of households even today. The tendency would be for the father to say, "Go to your mother and get cleaned up," or just go get cleaned up. It's a little bit unlikely that the father himself would actually pick up the child and go and clean the child. And yet the response of the mother is a very different one. The mother will herself instantly just pick up the child and go and clean the child with a lot of love. And when a soul first comes to God and we experience that connection with the Supreme, we're aware of how many mistakes we've made, how much dirt and dust we've accumulated on self, and there's a little bit of a hesitation to approach God. There's a question, how can I approach God if I'm not worthy? And yet God adopts the compassionate role of the mother and simply accepts the soul, no matter what the condition may be. And so the first step, God the Mother. The ocean of love, of forgiveness, of mercy. And then, having taken that strength from love, and having gone through a certain process of cleansing, I'm able to see God in the role of my Father. And in that role, God is the one who gives me a very special inheritance, that of happiness. One can develop all aspects of relationships in all different directions. God, the teacher, the Satguru, the Supreme Guru, the guide. One can experience God as companion, as beloved, as child. But whichever way it is I move in, the important thing is to make time and start bringing God back into the center of my life, instead of letting God be on the periphery. So morning and evening, spend a few minutes just contemplating, meditating on the subject of God, but through the day, have that awareness of God as your friend. Let us spend a minute in meditation together. I will speak my own thoughts, and I invite you to follow those ideas. As the body sits quietly, the attention of my mind turns within, and in this awareness of I, the eternal soul, I focus my thoughts on the Supreme, the being of light, God's light. Reaches the soul and purifies the soul. God's light cleanses the soul. And I come to that original state of purity and peace. There are various spiritual concepts that enable us to go into the depths of meditation and be able to strengthen that experience of inner silence and the relationship with God. And one of those concepts is the concept of eternity and the unlimited cosmic drama. The idea of seeing the whole world as a drama, with many different scenes being enacted on the world stage, is a concept that mystics as well as poets have spoken about and written about, both in the East as well as in the West. And yet it's not just a beautiful idea or philosophy, it's a very practical application of spirituality in our own life here and now. The very first step of spirituality is the recognition that I am not this body, I am that spiritual being of light located here in the center of the forehead. But of course, I'm not only a being of light. I very definitely also have this body. I have a role to play here in the world. And the path of meditation isn't just of being aware of the spiritual side of life and divorcing oneself from the totality of the experience of life, but rather it's returning to a state where I put my priorities right again and I learn to have a proper balance in my life. With spirituality, I'm able to be aware of the spiritual dimension of life, in which I'm able to develop the inner experience of peace, of love, of relationship with God, of truth, of power. But then, having had that inner experience, I then use that experience in my life within the physical dimension. And so my inner experiences then dictate how I see, how I speak, how I behave, what are the things that I do here in this world. And this conjunction of the spiritual and the physical, and both coming together, is this unlimited, beautiful drama that we are all witnessing each moment of our lives, that we are all experiencing every moment of our life, but also, more than that, we are actually also creating the drama. When I understand the secrets of this cosmic unlimited drama, I'm able to come to a point where I can not only understand what is eternity, but I'm able to be the creator of my own destiny. I'm able to be a master of my own emotions, and I'm able to maintain a state of happiness which is constant within the self. Generally what happens is that as we observe the different scenes of drama, not only do we observe those scenes of drama, but we're very much shaken by those scenes of drama. Something happens and instantly there's a huge upheaval and reaction for my part. I begin to ask, but why did this have to happen? It shouldn't have happened. I wish it hadn't happened. Why couldn't it have happened like this? You can see that there's many, many different negative thoughts and race thoughts that come as I observe the different scenes of life, of drama. And this is because I'm not able to stand back and detach myself from that scene of drama. I'm not able to be an observer of the scene of the drama. I get caught up within my own individual role in the drama, and I don't even realize that I'm actually an actor playing a role, and that this is just one role out of many, many roles that I have played in the past and will play in the future. But not only am I an actor playing a role within the drama, but I also have learned to be the observer, being able to watch the part that I play. Not only is it important to get into activity, but it's also important to be able to go into silence and for a few moments be able to step away from activity so that I can understand more clearly the significance of the activity and learn to play my own well. Meditation and this understanding of drama and playing my role within the drama both work together very powerfully. This is why one of the aspects of meditation has been described as that of being a karma yogi. The meditation, the yoga, the experience of that union with God and inner stillness, and then coming into the question of activity, karma, and being able to do the right karma at the right time. In silence, the soul experiences its own eternal state, the state of inner peace, of pure love, of purity, of power. And with that inner awareness of who I truly am, I can be very detached from the role that I'm playing for this period of time, for just a short while, through this particular costume, the body. Generally, what we find is that people normally identify just simply with a costume. This is where we get into all the problems of gender, age, nationality, race, religion, and so on and so on. Or sometimes, it isn't just the identification with the physical characteristics of the body, but the other identification that really narrows us and traps us is the identification with the role that I happen to be playing at for this period of time. For example, it might be related to my occupation, and I say I'm a doctor, but I existed before I took on this role as a doctor. and maybe, at some point of time, in a little while, I reach my stage of retirement where I've finished that role as a doctor and my identity cannot be contained just within this one aspect of my life, which is really my occupation or my profession of simply being a doctor. Or, if I say I'm a mother and that dominates my consciousness so that everything I do, everything I perceive, the whole of my life is dictated with this consciousness of being a mother, again, I'm narrowing down the potential that I have within me and the things that I could do and offer the world. I really existed as an identity and as a being, quite separate, independent from my child. And so my role as mother is very much in the context of one particular relationship. It doesn't have to dominate my consciousness completely. Yes, it's an important role, but it's not even the only role that I play. I play many other roles during the space of 24 hours. You can see how it's important to experience detachment, a separation of that which is the eternal, original identity of the self, from the costume and the role that I happen to be playing now at this point of time. The more I can do this, the more easily I'll be able to see exactly how to play my role in the best way possible. Because I then be able to access the inner most beautiful qualities that are latent within myself, and I'll be able to express those qualities in the role that I play. If I become trapped by my role, I forget that there's an inner resource that I have access to, and so I become limited in whatever it is I do. And usually, the other factor that gets involved in roles is that we get caught up in terms of the role in the context of another human being, and we develop automatic responses to other people and situations. And so then it's not possible to actually consciously choose how it is we would like to play this role and express ourselves. And so this is why it's important to